Welcome to Phoenix Magazine on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Casey Sheehan. This week, we're going to take a trip to San Diego County and learn a little bit about the origins of college basketball here in Arizona. So let's get to it. History Lesson: The Origins of College Basketball in Arizona by Douglas Town. Little more than a decade after the game's invention, college hoops officially arrived in the desert. The sport looked a lot different in 1904 than it does today. It's not a stretch to say that Tucson has both grub and game. In 2016, the city's thriving culinary scene became the nation's first to reap the coveted UNESCO title of City of Gastronomy. Similarly, the University of Arizona men's basketball team, nicknamed Point Guard U, has for 40 years been one of the nation's elite programs, dishing out winning seasons and All-American players, capped by an NCAA championship in 1997. The origins of Tucson's food fame are a multicultural, calorie-dense rabbit hole compared to its well-documented hoops heritage. 8 years before Arizona became a state, UA fielded its first men's basketball team, competing in the 1904-1905 season. Surprisingly, that squad set several standards, including going undefeated and snagging an obscure championship, a twofer that none of the modern top 20 powerhouse teams has matched. The catch? Their season consisted of but 2 games. Welcome to college basketball in territorial Arizona, when the sport was more closely related to Dr. James Naismith's iconic peach baskets than to the acrobatic high-flying game that arguably is the UA's most noted product. There were few hints that the sport invented in 1891 by Naismith at the Young Men's Christian Association in Springfield, Massachusetts, would go viral. Naismith only sought to keep boisterous youth busy inside a gym during inclement weather. Basketball was serendipitously named when a janitor brought him 2 peach baskets, instead of the requested boxes, to use as goals, which Naismith positioned 10 feet off the ground. The inaugural game, however, went differently than Naismith planned. The players, 9 to a team, who at the time were allowed to run with the ball without dribbling, began tackling, kicking, and punching in the clinches. They ended up in a free-for-all in the middle of the gym floor, resulting in several black eyes, a separated shoulder, and one player knocked unconscious, Naismith recalled in a 1939 interview. After Naismith tweaked some rules to make the sport more convivial, basketball went nationwide courtesy of local community YMCAs. By 1896, it had bounced into Tucson, as evidenced by a notice in the Arizona Weekly Citizen. The university boys will play a match game of basketball in front of the university building. All those interested in seeing the new game are invited to be present. The sport quickly caught on as a lunchtime activity at the school. This game is decidedly popular and ranks ahead of other formerly popular games. It is exciting and full of interest, stated the Arizona Daily Star. The available equipment, however, left something to be desired, a fact reflected in this deflating statement published in the newspaper 2 years later. The bladders for the basketball only lasted a game each. In 1904, the same year basketball became a demonstration sport in the St. Louis Summer Olympics, the first UA squad came together with a starting lineup of team captain Charles O. Brown, C. Woodell, J.W. Lewis, H.L. Bradford, and J.H. Stewart. The players' athletic backgrounds are unknown, but they surely weren't the finely tuned hoopsters who today run the court at McHale Memorial Center. Orrin A. Cates coached the team as well as the football squad and served as the school's first athletic director. The team's lone extant photo shows them playing outdoors in a scene reminiscent of dorm students blowing off steam before finals. Paleolithic competitive basketball was a much different game than that which is played today. It lacked 3-point shots, alley-oop dunks, and shot clocks. A jump ball was held after every basket. There were no African-American players. Haiti Red would be the first at UA in 1951. Overseas recruits were still further down the pipeline. And forget about crossover dribbles. Players could only move the ball by passing. But that didn't mean it was an easy sport to master. Other games are strenuous, demanding a great deal of endurance exerted on the part of the player. But there is no game that has not slight periods of rest for breathing space, excepting basketball, declared the Daily Star in 1905. The first UA team, then nicknamed the Varsity, proved it could hoop against older opponents from tough copper mining towns. The school's debut contest ended in a 40-32 victory over the Morenci YMCA on the road. The University of Arizona basketball team won a by no means easy game, expressed the Tucson Citizen. The playing of Waddell was phenomenal. Once the ball was fairly in his possession, a goal was almost sure to result. 2 days later, UA followed up with another away contest against the Bisbee YMCA, which had three players from the University of Minnesota team that won the U.S. championship in 1898. The Daily Star reported that the game ended in a 19-19 tie. A month later, a telegram from Morenci arrived in Tucson, informing UA that in the final contest of the round-robin competition, Morenci had defeated Bisbee 26-17. According to the tie-breaking protocol, the university therefore holds the championship of the Territory of Arizona for 1905, declared the Daily Star. Controversy lingers, however, over the title. At odds with coverage in The Citizen, the Bisbee Daily Review reported UA's victory over Morenci as 42-39. Moreover, it showed that the Bisbee YMCA actually defeated UA 20-19, describing the game as fast and snappy from start to finish. Which city's newspaper was guilty of duplicitous hometown journalism or just sloppy reporting remains a Sky Island mystery. The team's impressive debut initially failed to propel men's basketball to a high profile on the Tucson campus. The following year, The Citizen noted that work in basketball has begun and nearly every afternoon sees a lively match in the gymnasium. But only inter-squad games were held that season. When play against outside competition resumed, in 1906-1907, the basketball team compiled a composite 10-6 record over the next 5 years, with the coach listed as unknown in the Arizona Basketball Press Guide. The results are mostly unavailable for this period. The few known opponents include the Tucson Athletic Club, Tucson High School, and YMCA teams. Men's basketball would attain a more prominent status at UA when James Pop McHale embarked on a 7-year run as head coach in 1914, the same year the school's mascot became the Wildcat. The coach, after whom the McHale Center is named, started his UA career with back-to-back undefeated seasons. In 1925, Fred Enke took over for an incredible 36 seasons as head coach, taking the team to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 1951. After a few lackluster decades, the program would fly even higher, becoming a basketball powerhouse in the late 1980s under head coach Lute Olson. UA teams have received numerous accolades over the last four decades, but it was the 1904-1905 squad that went undefeated and snagged a coveted championship to start the ball rolling to big-time college basketball. Maybe it was destined, as the Daily Star said about the program in 1869. Basketball will become popular, and some brilliant work may be expected from the teams in the future. Spotlight, Relentless Beats founder Thomas Turner, by Madison Rutherford. We sat down with Phoenix event company Relentless Beats founder Thomas Turner to chat about AI-generated songs, Valley music venues, and the evolution of EDM. Valley native Thomas Turner began his career spinning records at Tempe's now-defunct dance club, Freedom at Pompeii, in the early 1990s, and hosted his first rave in 2000 at an abandoned post office in Flagstaff. Since then, he has remained a faithful steward of electronic dance music, EDM, throughout the Valley and beyond. producing festivals like PHX Lights and Body Language via his Phoenix event company Relentless Beats. With nearly 300 events that draw more than 250,000 attendees each year, Turner has successfully broken the stigma that raves are dangerous, drug-fueled gatherings, and helped bring them into the mainstream locally. He also brought legendary DJs like Steve Aoki, Skrillex, and Tiesto to Valley audiences. This year, he's teaming up with Coachella light tech Steven Lieberman, music industry vet Steve Kushner, and Ocotillo restaurateur Walter Sterling to launch a brand new venue in the former Film Bar space in downtown Phoenix. We sat down with Turner to chat about AI-generated songs, Valley music venues, and the evolution of EDM. What's been the biggest change in scaling events? What's remained the same? My love for well-made electronic music has stayed the same. There's a lot more music being made these days, and a lot more dance parties being held. While we provide a full spectrum of dance music to the community, it's important to us to stay true to the roots that created the path for all these artists to work in this industry and to support dance music of all kinds. Growth is tough, but distinguishing communities, distinguishing brands, and creating sustainability to service the full spectrum is invaluable. You began hosting fests at Phoenix Raceway in 2022. Why is it the ideal venue? Anywhere we can make the appropriate noise and have a clean palette to design a site, to come in with our creators, our artists, and our site planners, and plan a usable site for our event works. Right now, Westworld, the NASCAR track, and Rawhide all serve that purpose. We're also working on a marquee music festival that's going to go into a marquee park in downtown Phoenix for this year, too. What's the biggest difference between audiences in 1994 and those in 2024? A lot of it is exactly the same. People going out with their friends, trying to have the best time ever. Now, an AI music platform, in 1 second, will generate a song that's fully exportable, nice file quality, and can make it sound like any producer you want. And it's your song, so you can release it as an artist right now. You can completely embellish your whole career through this technology. You're going to have all these people listening to music where there was no love, blood, sweat, tears, trial, or error. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but when you watch a person get emotionally involved in a performer, and it's not authentic, that part is challenging to me. A few years ago, there was a lot of contention around Shady Park and noise complaints. What's the status now that you're planning to host events there again? There was a court case that saw them mediate everything that happened here and come to a conclusion that we could finally find a way for it with some modifications that helped the whole community feel good about Shady Park hosting events again. There's some construction now to be done and a period of time that it will take. Sometime later this year, we'll be able to host events again. You have a notebook where you write down future festival names. Tell us more about that process. I'll be listening to a song, or marketing director Dylan Arndt will come to me with an idea that will inspire a conversation that will lead to a choice. Some will come from songs that I've listened to for a long time. I sort of steal it out of that and call it a party. You're listening to Phoenix Magazine on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Casey Sheehan. Great Escapes, Oceanside Chill, by Leah Lemoine. This San Diego County gem marries small town and beach town vibes for a supremely soothing getaway. So wait, I say, as my driver barrels up the I-5 to avoid encroaching traffic. Is Oceanside a suburb of San Diego? When I told people I was coming to Oceanside, they kept saying, oh, I love San Diego. So then I thought it was a neighborhood in San Diego, like North Park or Little Italy. But you said it's 45 minutes from the airport? Are they separate cities? Is it like Phoenix, where Glendale is a suburb, but we count it as part of the whole Phoenix metro? Oceanside is in San Diego County, he calmly responds to my blathering. It's its own city, like Carlsbad or Encinitas. But it's all in San Diego County, so people lump it all together. It's all starting to make sense. Like many Phoenicians, I grew up regularly vacationing in San Diego proper. SeaWorld, Balboa Park, San Diego Zoo. I hadn't realized Carlsbad, where my dad rented a beach cottage for a few years, was also in this county that spans 4,300 square miles, about the area of Connecticut, with 70 miles of beach. Ditto Oceanside, a beach town just south of Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, in the northernmost part of the county, colloquially known as North County. My childhood friend visited Oceanside every summer with her family. Each time she mentioned it, the name alone threw me into a bookworm reverie. It sounded exactly like the kind of town where one of the Babysitter's Club super specials I whipped through as a kid would be set. Babysitter's Beach Vacation. Maybe this summer, Kayla will meet a cute boy and eat ice cream with him on the pier, I'd muse, with a faint tinge of envy. Fast forward 25 years, and I'm ready for my own beach vacation. I leave my own cute boy, and cute dogs, and less cute responsibilities, at home for a long-overdue solo trip to this idyllic-sounding town. Resort casual. Like a pair of sisters sprawled side by side on beach lounges, two new resorts lie on some of the best beachfront real estate in Oceanside. Mission Pacific Beach Resort, missionpacifichotel.com, and the Seabird Ocean Resort and Spa, theseabirdresort.com, opened adjacent to the historical Oceanside Pier in 2021 as a part of the largest beach development in San Diego County in more than 50 years. Though owned by the same hospitality company, each has a distinct vibe and clientele. Mission Pacific feels like a lavish jungle with neutral tones and natural materials like wood, teak, and rattan, accented with plenty of green plants and pops of warm metallics. With its buzzy rooftop bar and adults-only pool, it says grown-up luxury. The Seabird Resort, on the other hand, is expressly family-friendly. There are pool and beach activities as well as Little Seabird's kids programming, crafts, scavenger hunts, tie-dye workshops. The Seabird has a fresh nautical feel, with bright white walls contrasted with deep blue and sunny yellow rugs, pillows, and flowers. A collection of vintage bathing suits is framed in the Shelter Club lounge near the pool. Both properties are luxe, but approachable. It's a beach town, after all, and guests in bathing suits and towels mingle with those in suits and cocktail dresses. I room at Mission Pacific, but I bounce between the two hotels throughout my stay, walking across the street from meals and the spa at the Seabird. Beach, please. My first order of business after checking in. The beach. I walk out of the resort and see tourists queuing around the Top Gun House, the Victorian cottage built in the 1880s in Oceanside and featured prominently in the Tom Cruise classic. During construction of Mission Pacific and the Seabird, hotel ownership had the structure relocated to the resort grounds. It now houses Hi Pie, famoushipie.com, a bakery specializing in hand pies, as well as a replica of Cruise's motorcycle from the original movie and all manner of Maverick memorabilia. I snap a pic of the cottage and then amble down to the beach to find another charming relic, a 1941 Rambler camper, restored and retooled into a beachside bodega stocked with drinks, snacks, sunscreen, and chair and umbrella rentals. The rentals are complimentary for guests of Mission Pacific and the Seabird, and a Rambler cashier sets them up for me and recommends the grapefruit lime flavor of the De La Calle Tepache on offer. I sip my fizzy refreshment while I read a magazine and appreciate the feel of warm sand beneath my feet. I can't remember the last time I saw the ocean, but it was definitely pre-pandemic. The water is already a little chilly on my visit in August, but I still wade in until it splashes my shoulders, savoring the gentle push and pull of the waves. Such a lovely reunion. Beyond the beach. While I love the beach, I'm not someone who can spend all day there. I'm pleased to learn Oceanside has a bit more going on than sand and surf. Oceanside Museum of Art, oma-online.org, is small but packed with interesting exhibits during my visit, including an exhibition of Works Progress Administration art that movingly juxtaposes older pieces with modern interpretations. Fun fact, the Seabird Resort has a wing with art on loan from OMA, so you can see part of the museum's collection gratis, even if you can't make it to the museum itself. I also dig the architecture of the Oceanside Civic Center and Oceanside Public Library. OceansideLibrary.org, which abut OMA. The original buildings were conceived by architect Irving J. Gill in the 1920s, and in 1990 a new complex, inspired by Gill, was designed by architect Charles Moore. Cubic white edifices with mission-style arches and breezeways, punctuated with pink, yellow, and blue tiles, look striking against the blue sky. A vast fountain fills the plaza in front of the library, dotted with palm trees and blocky, colorful, and low-profile planters. It's like a Hollywood imagining of a California beach town city center. Just perfect. Also very California, the lowrider funeral procession cruising in front of St. Mary, Star of the Sea Catholic Church, across the street. As I marvel at the tricked-out cars in all their shimmery, sparkly flamboyance, and their drivers and passengers in their badass funeral finery, I think, wow, art really is all around us. That maxim holds true at The Ozone, shoptheozone.com, a boutique back by the hotels where you can get stunning Missoni towels and Lisa Eisner jewelry. I splurge on a pair of Rain sunglasses, a beloved California brand, and then head to the Tremont Collective, tremontcollective.com, a warehouse turned hub for local shops and food stalls. There's Brixton, Atacama Surf Shop, Communal Coffee, a coffee shop boutique, artisanal grocer, and Flower Bar, of course. And what I've come for, Schutz Fish and Beer, schutzog.com. Tacos y más. Schutz is what every cashier, concierge, Uber driver, and hotel rep has told me when I ask them where to get the best tacos in this town. The tiny food stall, founded by a pro surfer, a chef, and a hospitality vet, is connected to a bottle shop and bar. True to its name, it specializes in fish, tacos and poke, and craft beer. IPA, double IPA, blonde ale, and Japanese lager. The Pescadero's tacos include the catch of the day, cabbage slaw, Schutz sauce, a kicky crema, pickled vegetables, cilantro, and cotija. They are quite tasty. You can feel the freshness of the fish in the corn tortillas. I hate to be contrarian, and no disrespect to the locals I've interrogated, but for my money, the best tacos in Oceanside are at Craft Coast Beer and Tacos, craftcoast.co. This industrial brew pub is a 5-minute walk from my hotel, and I love it so much that I eat there twice during my stay. The birria, al pastor, and pollo asado tacos are heavenly, with abundant, high-quality meats and fresh accoutrement on homemade corn tortillas. But the carne asada is transcendent. I am not even a beef person, yet I eat every caramelized morsel of juicy, gristle-free top sirloin. Get it Craft Coast style, with crispy melted cheese and pinto beans for the heartiest taco you've ever eaten. Two tacos will get you full there. Three if you're ravenous. The resorts also have tempting dining options. High-low is a coffee shop slash pastry counter slash breakfast and brunch spot at the Mission Pacific. The rooftop bar at Mission Pacific has a bird's eye view of the pier, a lengthy craft cocktail list, and Mediterranean-inspired noshes like the Yummy Spread Trio, white bean hummus, whipped feta, and baba ganoush, and succulent tiger prawns with red chermoula and lemon. At the Seabird, the shore room is a breezy, literally, open-air hangout for happy hour with beach views. And Piper offers seasonal coastal cuisine along with house-made pasta. My basil gnocchi with pistachio pesto and local catch of the day, striped bass, with seasonal veggies, sugar snap peas and squash, and romesco are perfection. It's the crispiest fish skin I have had in a long time. R&R. It isn't a vacation without some lounging. If you're more of a pool girly than a beach girly, you can rent private cabanas at the pools at Mission Pacific and the Seabird. Or just post up on the free-use lounge chairs. Surprise, surprise, I, a child-free woman, prefer the pool scene at the adults-only Mission Pacific piscine. The Seabird pool does offer a devastatingly sweet and strong piña colada, if that floats your boat. Down that and some hot, salty French fries, and you'll forget about the screaming children splashing around you. I wrap my visit with a trip to Sunny Spa and Beauty Lounge at the Seabird, and am pleasantly surprised at every turn. First, the decor. Truly bright and sunny, as its name suggests, not dark and candlelit or white and sterile like resort spas tend to be. The fellow at the front desk greets me with a glass of champagne and calls me Leah, not Miss Lemoyne, a formality that has always made me uncomfortable in service situations. He's fun, friendly, and talks to me like a real person, not like a hospitality robot. The treatment waiting area is full of cool books and comfy chairs that invite lingering. It opens into a balcony overlooking the ocean where the sun is starting to set. I'm joyful and relaxed, even before the massage therapist calls my name. I may not have had a vacation fling a la the Babysitter's Club. A good thing, since I'm in a committed relationship. But I'm pretty sure Christy and the gang never hit the spa and sip champs in their super specials. Sometimes it's good to experience things when you're a little older. Well, that does it for this week's episode. I've been your volunteer reader, Casey Sheehan. Be sure to stay tuned for more great programming right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona.